We ask that use of the church is limited to the bathrooms, which are located to the left of the front door, or through the fellowship hall and to the right. Please feel free to stay after the meeting. For fellowship, the church will be locked at 9:45. Please turn off all cell phones at this time. We ask that you limit your movement during the meeting, especially during the speaker's talk. And I've asked Dave to read the preamble.
Hey everybody, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. This is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, and does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thanks for letting me read.
Thanks for reading.
I've asked Jacob to read the 12 steps.
Jacob, alcoholic. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for our knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thanks for reading.
And I've asked Dakota to read the set-aside prayer.
Thank you, Dakota.
I'm Dakota, grateful recovering addict. Dear God, please set aside anything I think I know about myself, about my illness, about the big book, about the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, in all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so that I might have an open mind and a new experience with all things. Please help me see the truth. Amen.
Amen.
Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Tim from Delaware.
Love that you guys started this meeting with the set-aside prayer, but if you just indulge me for a quick second, I need to say a prayer to my own personal God so that I can get this thing off and running the way that it should be, because, man, it's glaringly apparent to me, the left of my own devices and what's in between my ears, if that's what I'm running off, I'm going to be in trouble, and anybody in close proximity is going to be in trouble too. So just indulge me real quick. I'm just going to say a small prayer and we're going to get to this thing, man. So God, please be with me. Please remove my fear and direct my attention to what you'd have me be. Please help me to be an open channel and a vessel and an instrument of your love and peace. And please work through my heart, touch my heart, so I'm capable of touching the heart of somebody in the room, and let me be useful to at least one person in the room. Please help us to see that we're all here of one consciousness and here to help one another. Please be with me. I surrender this talk to you. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. My name's Tim. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really grateful to be here. I want to thank Tom for reaching out to me, and I want to thank the group for having me. Because for me personally, there is a debt that cannot be repaid to Alcoholics Anonymous for me personally. Why would I drive an hour and 20 minutes on a Monday night to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? The sole fact is that Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps and the loving hand of God that came through a sponsor who was armed with the facts about alcoholism, who has extended his hand to me and laid out the program of action that changed any and everything for me. So for me, there is a debt that cannot be repaid here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just try and chip away at it a little bit at a time by doing things like this when I'm asked to do them, by showing up to a home group, by having service in that home group, and most importantly, by sitting down with a guy who's blown up his life another time, has that lost, sad look on his face, has no idea where he got to, where he got to, and how he has devastated himself and everybody else around him. And to sit down and to be able to literally just say, man, there's no difference between you and I. It's not that I identify with you, it's that I am you, you know? And so I try and chip away at that debt as best I can, and I don't think that I could ever repay it for the life that I have today. So I have a sobriety date. It's March 6, 2015. I did not choose that day. If you're like me, man, I have been trying to get and stay sober in any facet that you can think of. And for a guy like me, I could just not put the puzzle pieces together. None of it was going to be enough for me, man. Pain in my family's eyes did not stop me. Consequences from the law did not stop me. Homelessness did not stop me. And literally feeling like I don't know what to do next, which resonates for a very short period of time, but then this thing kicks right back in and that don't stop me either. It's only been the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and a connection with God that you guys showed me that has allowed me to live a life that's beyond. You know, I used to hear that saying and I'm like, beyond your wildest dreams, like what does that really mean? And I had no idea what I was looking for when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, but you guys have given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, man. And the fact of the matter is it's pretty simplistic. You know, if somebody looked at my life from the outside, I don't know if it would be a life beyond their wildest dreams, but what I have in my heart and the peace that I'm going to bed with these days is beyond for me, and that is beyond my wildest dreams. So so that's my sobriety date. I have two different home groups, pretty sick guy, and love Alcoholics Anonymous that much. And from the very beginning, these are the home groups that my sponsor took me to. And to this day, I got in with the fellowship, and I'm so grateful for the sponsor that I have because he didn't talk to me about how to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. And in fact, he didn't tell me how to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. He showed me with his footwork. He picked me up for almost the first year of my sobriety. Sometimes an hour before the meeting started, I'm like, dude, what are we doing? What are you doing? He's like, just shut up, get in the car, stay put. On the way there, we're picking up two or three more other guys. We're getting to the meeting, we're setting up. He's making coffee, and then when the meeting's done, he's helped break down, and then he's talking to the new guy. And for me, because I don't know about you guys, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of trust issues. You can sell stuff to me all day long because that's what I do. I'm going to sell you something, but the reality is what I'm selling you ain't the truth. And what I saw in his footwork and what he was doing resonated with me, and I was drawn to that. So in those two different home groups, I've had a service commitment since I got sober and joined those home groups. I've done everything, but everything, including setting up chairs, coffee, intergroup rep. If you guys want to understand alcoholism on a whole new level, go to an intergroup meeting. That is a whole different level. Keys to the church. That's insane. My mom would shut the lights off and close the blinds if she knew I was in close proximity to her house. I was not wanted in a lot of different places other than by the law. And currently I just switched to the treasurer position because it's probably the only one that I haven't had. And I know that in internally, and in my mind, I was like, that's not the service commitment I want, but I can hear my sponsor saying, well, if that's the one you don't want, that's the one you're taking. And so I'm currently the treasurer at my home group. And those two different home groups are the Green Hill Beginners group in Wilmington, Delaware. We meet on Friday night at 6:30. If you guys are ever in the area, please come and see us. I love that group because it's listed as a beginners meeting. Because there are men in there who are armed with the facts about alcoholism and are looking for that guy that has that lost look. And what a gift that is, man. And then my other home group is the Fairfax Speaker Group. We meet at 7 o'clock on Sunday nights, very much like this, our speaker meeting. It's great. I don't have to sit in there and think about what I'm going to share. Anybody do that? I'm going to think about what I'm going to share. I just get to go into that home group and hear how somebody suffered from alcoholism, how a sponsor picked them up, took them through the program of action, and how their life is dramatically different, and how they built this relationship with God. So those are my home groups. Obviously, I already mentioned I have a sponsor who took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't take me this way, that way, her way. He said, if you identify with the symptoms that are listed in this book, there is a plan of action that'll help you get free of that. And he took me line by line through the big book. And all I did was be in enough pain and in a position where I was willing to do that. And that's where everything changed. And the last most important part, I have the honor and privilege of taking other men through the 12 steps. One of them's with me tonight, man. Dave, I love you, dude. Thank you for taking the journey with me. It has been an absolute miracle to watch God enter your heart and enter your life, man. And more importantly, to watch you extend your hand to other people's, because that's what this deal is about. So those are the logistics. Now that those are out of the way, it's just my job to tell you guys in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. When I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't use a lot of the terms that were being thrown around. I didn't understand a lot of them. I've never heard the word malady before. I didn't know what a resentment really was. I knew I was pissed off a lot. I knew that anybody that I came in contact with irritated me. I knew that. But thanks to good sponsorship, my sponsor laid out what that spiritual malady was. And it turns out that I had alcoholism way before I ever even picked up a drink. And what that looks like for me is just a feeling of emptiness, loneliness, listlessness. My head is constantly putting the screws to me. I'm in a world that I don't want to be in, man. I don't know about you guys, but before I found alcohol, walking around sober was painful for me. I just did not. The puzzle pieces were just not fitting, man. And that malady ate away at me. I remember at one point, I was really young, and I was in my bed, man, and this thing's churning and churning and churning. And I was raised in a really good household, and my old man loved me beyond. I just remember laying in my bed, and, you know, I just have these obsessive thoughts that are going over and over and over and over and over again, because another way it presents itself is I just have this gnawing sense of inferiority. I feel inadequate to any and everything. I'm not measuring up to much. And on top of that, I have that egomaniac with an inferiority complex. Like, I'm king shit, and if you hit me in the knees, I'm now a worm. But I'm the most important worm that you know, just so you know. But all that was going on inside of me, man, and I remember just mustering up just enough courage to go to my dad's bedside. And the only thing that could spill out was like, Dad, I just don't feel like I've loved you enough. And he looked at me like I had five heads. That's the kind of stuff where this malady really presents itself to me. And I didn't know before going through this course of work that that's what alcoholism was, because, man, if that's what you got going on inside of you, it is difficult to operate in this world. I remember being at birthday parties and walking in, and the kids were just like seamlessly having fun. They weren't thinking about much of anything. They were just doing. And I'm off in the corner and I feel alone and separate from, and I don't understand why I feel that way. And I remember at one point I thought that something outside of me was going to change that. I was like, it's going to be my birthday in the comfort of my own house, and I'm going to have a different experience. And the reality is, for a guy like me, is once those kids piled in, and knowing the disease that I have now, when I was there, the same exact thing happened. It was seamless for them. It was in my own house, and I had built up all of these expectations that maybe this is going to be different. Maybe I'm going to be able to actually fit in and like be able to feel like I'm a part of something. And that's not what happened. And worse yet, when they left, I don't know about you guys, I was left with that empty party afternoon. Like, I built up all these expectations and everybody rolled, and I'm like, damn, dude, I'm more alone now than I was before this whole thing began. So through good sponsorship, I was able to understand what that malady was and how it really presents itself. So the other gift of Alcoholics Anonymous for me is, I've heard a lot of definitions of alcoholism, but I think the one that works best for me is, man, I felt homeless my whole life. Now, I've been physically homeless. That sucks. I know what that feels like. But when you're sitting in a room with family members that you know care and love you, but you still feel like you're not a part of that whole family unit, like, here's the family unit, and here's Tim. That's how I felt inside, no matter where I was. So I learned a lot of stage characters to try and navigate through that. I could be a chameleon and get in with different people and present myself a certain way so that it looked like I fit in, man. But the reality is, at the end of the night, I'm laying in bed with a big empty, and I don't know why I feel that way. So I'm going to tell you guys about the first time that I had my first drink. And I'm going to explain to you what I know now. What is alcoholism? Knowing that I have it. There's two defining factors as to why I know I'm an alcoholic. It was New Year's Eve, and I was raised in a house with five other boys. God bless my mom. All we did was just beat the hell out of each other. But it was New Year's Eve, and the majority of my brothers, except for one, are all older than me, and I wanted to be cool like my older brothers. And she let them drink beer, and I walked up to my mom and said, you know, I want to drink beer too. And she said, absolutely not. You're 9 years old. But here's the thing about this disease. When I want something, I'm going to get it. And that's true to this day if I'm not using these spiritual principles in my life and how I'm operating in the world. I'm going to steamroll some people, because the bottom line is, if you are in close proximity to a guy like me who suffers from alcoholism, I'm going to steamroll you. And it's not because I want to. It's not because I want to. So she finally just said, fine, get out of my face. Go ahead. And my brothers drank a beer and a half and they acted drunk. And I let that second Budweiser slide down. And I'm telling you guys, the minute I felt that Budweiser rise from my stomach to the top of my head for the first time in my life, I felt free, man. There was no more emptiness. There was no more listlessness. I did not feel apart from. I did not feel separate from. I was not constantly thinking about what other people thought of me. This is how my brain works. It thinks, I'm always wondering, what I think of me, what you think of me, and worse yet, what I think you think of me. Add some LSD on top of that and see what kind of night you have after that. Dude, I spent some dark nights alone contemplating all that stuff. So when the effect from alcohol was produced, I'm telling you guys that was something really magical for me. I remember where I was. I remember what the room looked like. I remember what I was wearing. I remember what the room smelled like, because it had that much of a profound effect on me. That is the difference between me, an alcoholic, and somebody who's non-alcoholic, because my brothers did not have that same experience. I talked with them about that. They did not have the same experience as me. So that is one defining characteristic that I know makes me an alcoholic. Here's the second one. I didn't even really know what alcohol was, but I knew that whatever just happened to me, I know I need more. There is no question that I need more. And I went and sought out a bottle, and it turns out I didn't even know what it was at the time. Turns out it was whiskey. I drained half that bottle, and I was blackout drunk the first time I ever drank. Because once that thing got triggered, man, if you're like me, once you prime the carburetor, it's time to step on the gas pedal. Because once I feel the effect produced, man, I got to go. I got to go. So those are the defining characteristics that I know makes me an alcoholic. Dave and I always laugh about this one. It's like the Wizard of Oz, and I'm not going to say that I'm dating myself now, Dave, because Dave squared me up. He's like, everybody's seen the Wizard of Oz, dude. It's not about how old you are. But if you've ever seen the Wizard of Oz, the whole movie's in black and white. And then out of nowhere, it turns into color. That's what alcohol does for me, man. I get to see the world in a completely different fashion. So I obviously did not become a homeless alcoholic at 9 years old. But I'm telling you guys, I locked that experience in because I knew that I was going to be chasing it, and I knew that I had found a missing piece in my life that I was going to chase for quite some time. So another really defining moment, because I believe that was a defining moment for me. Finding out what alcohol, not what it so much does to me, it's what it does for me. It's what it does for me, and that's why I keep chasing it. And now we're talking about the physical components that end up leaving me in a place that I don't even know how I got to. But so that was a really defining moment in my life, and I'm going to tell you guys about another defining moment in my life, and I'm going to rip through the rest of my drinking, because if you're in this meeting tonight, you probably know how to drink, and you probably how to do it to excess, and you probably know what it's like to bottom out, and then you probably know that you need some help, which is why you're here tonight. So there's no sense in wasting all this time talking about my drinking. I just want to qualify myself to you guys, and hopefully you're identifying with some of the thoughts and the feelings, and I'll just run through the litany and get to the end to where I suffered a spiritual bottom that I had never suffered before, and I was ready to do something different. So one other really defining moment in my life is I'm going to tell you guys where and how and why I got turned off to the idea of God. I was 16 years old. I'm already drinking and drugging. It's already going south for the most part, but I have this delusion that I can control and manage my drinking. And out of nowhere, man, I find out that my father gets diagnosed with terminal cancer. And in no time flat, matter of months, I watch that disease whittle away the most selfless, loving, beautiful human being I'd ever known in my entire life. And I'm at the lowest point of my life, man. And I'm telling you guys, if you stack that kind of pain on top of that internal condition that I already have, I am not faring well with that at all. I'm at the lowest point of my life, and my father's in a coffin 5 feet away from me. And a woman walks up to me, who I now know is not a true agent of God, walks up to me smiling and said, "This is God's will." And right then and there, that was enough for me. This wall of obstinacy, this wall of pride. I remember having the thought and saying out loud, if that's all you got, you better bring more. Because if you knock me down, I'm coming running 10 times harder. And that kind of thinking almost killed me. So right then and there, man, the God thing, because I was raised as a Catholic. I went to Catholic school from kindergarten to sixth grade. But I'm going to tell you guys, I knelt when they knelt and I prayed when they prayed, but I did not feel what they felt. So I didn't think that any of it worked for me. I didn't think that the God idea was for me at all. So I shut down right then and there. That was enough for me. And it really starts to take off. I tried the geographical change. I don't know if ever you guys have ever tried that one, man. I tried to run away from my alcoholism. And that didn't work either. So when I was in high school, I had a high school sweetheart who literally changed her entire life path to be with me. Transfers from the University of Delaware to the University of Clemson because I just up and moved to Greenville, South Carolina. But little did she know that she just stepped in a ring with a monster inside of me that has an appetite that is insatiable and cannot be pacified. I wanted to desperately show her how much I loved her. I want to show my mom desperately how much I love her. But when this thing's on top of me, man, it's making every choice for me. So I drag her through hell, man, almost for 4 years. And this is where the consequences start to pile up. I get a DUI in her car in Atlanta. So I'm from Wilmington, Delaware, removed to Greenville, South Carolina, in Atlanta in her car, DUI. I'm in Fulton County lockup. Whew, that was brutal. And so she finally has enough and she says, I got to go, man. So then I'm self-centeredly thinking, this is really painful. But somewhere inside of me, I was like, well, I'm kind of glad she's gone now because nobody's going to talk to me about the way I'm drinking and drugging. And I'm able to do what I want, when I want, and how I want. The devastation of a life run on self-will. So I end up starting to get tones of home and I move back to Wilmington, Delaware, and I end up getting in the restaurant business. Anybody here work in the restaurant business? What a beautiful place for a guy like me to hide out in, because it looks very similar. It looks really similar. Pocket full of money, every intention of being responsible. Somebody says, let's go to the bar and have a drink. I'm like, good idea. They're like, another? I'm like, thought you'd never ask. After two, they're like, have a good night, guys. I'm going to go home and go to bed. And I'm 3 days removed. No money in my pocket, wondering how this happened to me. That's the baffling aspect of alcoholism. I didn't know what I was suffering from at the time. I thought that I was making those choices and that next time it was going to be different. So I just run through the litany of what that looks like in my life. I have all the respect in the world for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll keep it in the bottle, but if you name it, I've been addicted to it. Crack cocaine, PCP, heroin, Oxycontin, Vicodin, ecstasy, booze, name it. If it gets me out of this, then I'm all for it. So here comes the litany of consequences. Through that process, I end up losing 4 different jobs, 2 more DUIs, and everywhere in my life that I turn, everybody seems to have the same disgusted look on their face. And that look was to follow me no matter where I went. And it was from people that genuinely cared about me and that probably either really liked me or loved me. But by the time I show them what I got really going on, they just have that disgusted look. Getting pulled into employers' offices like, man, you are not the guy we hired, man. We got to let you go. So I ended up losing my first job. And I just want to say something before I get to the end, that this was a really profound experience for me because this is the first time it sends up red flags to my family. And I'd watched Intervention. I knew the deal. When my brother picked me up and I walked into that room and everybody's in a circle and there's one stranger, I'm like, I know what this is. I know exactly what this is. And I remember walking in there and saying, if you guys are going to ask me if I need help, just so you know, the answer is yes. Because I was in a lot of pain that day, and so were they. But one of my favorite lines in the doctor's opinion is when it says, he passes through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to do it again. And this is repeated over and over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. You could not have described my attempt at getting sober any more perfectly than that. Because on that day, when I was in an immense amount of pain and I was looking my family in the eyes and I said to them, I don't want to hurt like this anymore. I don't want to hurt you like this anymore. I'm done. And you could have put a lie detector test on my arm and I would have passed with flying colors. But I go into 28-day inpatient treatment with 3 conditions. Isn't that great? Only an alcoholic will say, yes, I need help, but here are my conditions, right? So my 3 conditions were, I don't want to feel physical detox, impossible. I don't want to feel like I'm in jail. Didn't happen. And the best one for last, please do not send me to a facility that has a bunch of God banter. Don't do it. How do you think I fared coming out of that rehab? Not good. I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time from that rehab in York, Pennsylvania. If you guys have ever been to York, that is a huge pocket of enthusiasm. They are doing the deal there, the home groups that I've been to. And I felt what was going on, and I wanted a piece of it, but I didn't want to do any of the work to get what they were talking about. So I would go into a meeting, I'd look at my phone, text somebody that really didn't exist so that you wouldn't talk to me, and at the end of the meeting, when it was time to pray, I'm like, I heard what I needed to. I got to go. And the thought hits me out of nowhere. And for me, once that thought hits, I'm on the train. 6-year run. I lose everything. And at the very end of my drinking, I'm sleeping behind a dumpster and I got nothing left. That's where alcoholism takes me, man. That's where it takes me. So at the very end, I remember... my family's been on the merry-go-round the whole time with me, the whole time. And my mom sent me one of the most profound text messages that she could have ever sent me. And she said, Tim, you've lost another job. You crashed your car. You have no money. You're homeless and you have no options. That's really sad. It's probably going to get worse. And I was pissed at the time. But you want to talk about selfishness and self-centeredness. I reduced my mom to that statement. I reduced her to saying to her son, your life sucks, man, and I'm worried to death for you, but guess what? I'm not going to worry about you anymore. If this is how you're going to live your life, you can do it over there. Thank God for the amends process. After making amends to my mom, I don't know if I can ever make it right to her. After what I brought her to make that statement, but through the 9-step process, I'm able to show up bit by bit, piece by piece, to try and make it right to a woman. In the big book, it says passing all understanding is the patience that mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. My mom got burned up, man, in the worst way possible. So through that nine step, thankfully that stuff's been healed. But the other end of it, my brother said, dude, I'll take you to Texas if you need to go. But like, what's the plan? I'm not coming down there and picking you up with the trash bag you got left in life and you're my problem again. I want plan B. So I called Kirkwood Detox. They were willing to take me. And I called him back and he's like, all right, let's go. So he drove me there, silent car ride. I go in to see if they'll accept me. They do. I walk back out to the car. It was not like the intervention, man. It was not like the previous experiences. There was no hugs. There was no pats on the back. There was no, I'm proud of you. You can do this. He said, get that trash bag, go in there and get your shit together and peeled out of the parking lot. And I walked into Kirkwood Detox, 122 pounds, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually broken like I had never been broken before. And I look back on that moment, and I look back, when I do look back, really ugly, a really ugly part of my life. But I look back on it now, and what a beautiful gift that was. Because right then and there, I had nothing left, man. There was nothing in the gas tank. I had no options. I had no ideas. I had burned every bridge. Nobody would talk to me. And man, I was crying myself to sleep every single night in there. So I don't know about you guys. There's something about a good ass whooping that'll open your ears up to something different, man. And that's where I was. So I became a yes man. They said, where do you want to go next? I said, I don't know. Please tell me where to go. So I ended up getting into a state-funded rehab. This is a really significant part of my story. In that state-funded rehab, when I walked in, they showed me who my roommate was going to be. And when he turned the corner, he had a Pearl Jam t-shirt on. I was like, dude, we're going to get along just fine. This is going to be good, man. But when we turned into the dorm room, I looked on the nightstand. And on that nightstand, he had two big books. He had two 12 and 12s. He had Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and he had Bill Wilson's Passing On. And he said, Tim, I've experienced what Alcoholics Anonymous can do for me. I've done it. I've had a good life. The only reason I'm your roommate in a state-funded rehab is I stopped doing what they asked me to do. I said, okay. He still had a sponsor at this time, and he's calling his sponsor at the end of the night, and his sponsor saying, when you guys get done with the therapeutic community stuff, all the cognitive behavioral therapy stuff, why don't you sit down with that new guy and crack the book open? And that's exactly what he did. Dude, what a gift that was. His sponsor knew where the answer was for both of us at the same time. For both of us. So he took me line by line through that book, and I found myself in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he got me down on my knees, and we said that third step prayer, and I'm telling you guys that my life has not been the same since I said that third step prayer. That changed the whole trajectory of my life because I was broken enough to listen to somebody else and honest and sincere enough to say a third step prayer because I was out of ideas. He laid out a four-column inventory, and I wrote it to the best of my ability. I did a fifth step with him. I did step 6 and 7 with him, and I made my list, but I'm still in inpatient rehab and unable to make those amends. Here's the beauty and blessing of this program. I'm going to go on to where I got plugged in with my current sponsor, which is the sponsor I've had since I got out of that state-funded rehab. But when I got out of that and I got in the middle of this deal and I started doing it with another sponsor, Matt called me, the same guy from state-funded rehab, and he started drinking again and he was having trouble. And he turned to me for help. I said, Matt, there's only one difference between me and you. And he said, what's that? I said, I took action and continue to take action in a program you showed me. So we go line by line and do the deal, and we come up to that ninth step. And he's resistant. He's like, dude, I'm not making these amends, man. I'm not doing it. I said, you're going to drink, Matt. You're going to drink. And sure enough, we buried Matt Ohop. We buried him. In the big book, when it says he could not or would not see our way of life, we buried him. Now, when that happened, did it hurt? Damn right it hurt. Was I sad? Yes, I was. But maybe that guy was put into my life to say that third step prayer and get lit up enough to get in the middle of this and continue to do it so guys like Dave could have a chance and guys that sit down with Dave have a chance. Maybe Matt did that so he could create purpose in other people's lives. And that all came from a sponsor who was still in this thing telling him what to do. So while I was in that state-funded rehab, my would-be sponsor came in and shared a message of hope that hit me square in the chest. So when I was in the state-funded rehab, it was 3 months long. I'm still a yes man. I'm like, please tell me what to do. They bring up the idea of Lyman House. If you guys are ever in Wilmington, Delaware, and you see a gray van pull up and there's guys licking the windows, that's Lyman House. Special ed of recovery, man. Been on the circuit for a minute, trying to get and stay sober, burn up all of any options that they can think of. And so I interview there, and they're willing to accept me. And the long and short of Lyman House is this. Here's the whole program, and I stayed there for 8 months. Here's the crux of the program. You suck at running your life. Sit down, shut up. If you want to eat here and sleep here, you're going to go to a minimum of 2 meetings a day. You're going to get a sponsor, and you're going to go through the 12 steps. And that's what I did. So when my sponsor came in and shared that message when I was in the state-funded rehab, I walked up to him and I said, Oliver, it's time for me to get a sponsor. Would you be willing to sponsor me? And he said, it would be an honor and a privilege. Just so you know, this is a program of action. So right away, mentally, I'm like, I know I need help, but I don't know if I need your help, buddy. But I was willing enough to just sit down with him, and he did the same thing Matt did with me, man. We went line by line. I said another third step prayer, found myself in that book all over again, wrote a 4-column inventory. This time I was able to dig much deeper. Did that fifth step with him, 6, 7, into step 8, and I want to tell you guys about my 9th step. Because for me personally, I got some relief in a third step prayer. In hindsight, I know it changed everything. I got some relief doing step 4 and step 5, but I'm telling you guys, step 9 is where the magic happened for me. I remember saying to my sponsor at step 2, show me what God you're talking about. Show me. He said, I will. If you get on your knees and say this prayer with me, and you say it sincerely enough, and I lay out this 4-column inventory, and you write every bit of it down, and you share every bit of it with me, and we ask this power to change you in step 6 and 7, and then you make this list of people you've harmed, and you go out to start making these amends, let's have a conversation then. And that's exactly what happened. And I'm telling you guys, when I started getting to that 9th step and took the action, I was no longer talking about God. I was experiencing God from the inside out. So I just want to share some 9-step stuff with you guys, talk briefly about steps 10, 11, and then really go into step 12, which is the crux of this program, and then just tell you a little bit of what my life is like today. So, man, I told you guys how important my dad was to me, man. I got more in 16 years than most get in a lifetime. He taught me how to treat my mom. He taught me how to treat a woman. He taught me how to show up in sports. He taught me what work ethic was. And in active alcoholism, I'm incapable of doing any of those things. I am racked with guilt and shame about what I had become. We buried him when I was 16, and I had not visited his headstone that whole time because I was just unbearably embarrassed about the individual that I had become. So my sponsor says, I'm going to visit All Saints Cemetery today. Do you want to come? And I know what that is, man. It's a prompt into action. So I'd already made amends to my mom, and that relationship had been repaired through the 9-step process, and we are literally like connected in a way that we've never been connected before. So I call her and I'm like, Mom, I'm ashamed to say this. I don't even know where the headstone is. And she says, if you walk down this one path and you see 4 trees, all you got to do is just go catty corner and you'll beeline right to it. So my parents had divorced when I was young, 6 years old. I had no idea they were going to divorce. It was completely civil, but they just sat us down one day and said, you know, your mom and I are not going to be together anymore. And they went their separate paths. So my mom had remarried 2 times after that. They were completely not in a relationship anymore. But as I was going down to look for my father's headstone, I'm looking. And as I look down, I come up on it and I see that my mom had bought a plot next to my dad. And in that moment, man, the idea of my mom in my heart grew 10 times over. And I'm telling you guys, that I knelt in front of my father's grave, and for the first time in my life, I didn't have to ask if my old man was proud of me. You guys provided that answer. The 12 steps provided that answer. And it just fell out of me, man. And my relationship with my dad today is tighter than it's ever been, and you guys gave me that gift, man. I can't thank you enough for that experience. What a beautiful gift that is, man. Unbelievable. When I was in that state-funded rehab, my younger brother had kids, two nieces and a nephew. And my counselor sat me down and sat my family right in front of me and said, she said, I want you to tell Tim what this addiction has done to this family. And they did. And my younger brother said to me, Tim, I knew you growing up. You are not that person anymore, nor have you been that person for a very long time. And I've had kids since then. And they know the name Uncle Tim, but they don't know you. In fact, you scare them. And that hurt big time. But I'm telling you that I went to my brother in that ninth step and laid out all this damage and asked him what I could do to make it right. He gave me some terms, but he looked me dead in my eyes and said, Tim, I want you to be an uncle to my kids. And I spent my first year sober at my family's house. And at the time, my niece is 5 years old. And I'm in the deal, man. I'm headstrong in that ninth step. I'm working steps 10, 11, and I'm ultimately looking to extend my hand to somebody else. So the fire's lit, man. The fire is lit and it's raging. I know it is. But I look across the room and my niece, who's 5 years old, she's looking at me from across the room and I have no idea why she's looking at me the way that she is. And out of nowhere, she draws a little bit closer. And she draws a little bit closer. And she draws a little bit closer. And in no time flat, she's in my lap. And we are glued for the rest of the night. And my brother walks up to her and says, at least it's time to go. And this little girl wrapped her arms around my neck, looked me dead in my eye and said, I love you, Uncle Tim, and I don't want you to leave. And I looked up and saw the look on my brother's face. You can't buy moments like that. In our big book, it says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. She had it. She was as pure as they come. And because I had taken action in 12 steps, she's drawn to it like a magnet. That happens every time I'm around them. Every time I'm there. I went to go see my younger niece play soccer. And they were playing on, my nephew was playing on the lacrosse field on one field, and then the girls were on a separate field. And I'm like, Jeff, my younger brother, I'm like, where are the girls? He's like, they're on the next field over. So when I walk up there, I'm scanning, looking for them. And out of nowhere, I just hear, Uncle Tim! She comes running, jumps into my arms. It's like a movie, man. All the soccer moms are like, oh! I'm like, yeah, Uncle Tim! But dude, it's like a magnet, man. I'm like, there's just something magical that occurs between us because they have the light of God inside of them. Dude, they ain't thinking about resentments and pissed off at the world. They're as pure as they come. And when I take these actions and stay in the middle of this, they're drawn to it like a magnet. What a beautiful gift that is, man. And you guys gave that to me. Talk about a life beyond your wildest dreams. Whew. Unbelievable. One other ninth step deal, man. My buddy Kevin, I grew up with him, groomsman in his wedding. So not just normal life stuff. Like, we grew up together. And we were tight. And when I got out of my first rehab, he threw me a bone to get into commercial plumbing. He's like, he had no idea what alcoholism really was. He's like, you know, you went through 28-day treatment, everything should be good. I'm like, I agree, dude. I agree, what's next? So he throws me a bone, puts his neck out for me, and gets me this job. But without a sponsor, without a God in my life, and minimal meeting attendance, I do what I do, man. The thought hits me and I go, and he ends up giving me a urine screen on the job. It lights up like a Christmas tree and he cans me. He was on my four step, obviously. I was pissed. So from that point, 8 years go by. I didn't say a word to this man. I just cut him off. How could you do this to me? How could you do this to me? And I'm working at Home Depot and I'm making $9.50 an hour. and I'm barely getting by, and I get my first paycheck, and my sponsor's like, I'm glad you got a paycheck with your name on it, but you know that's not your money. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is my first paycheck, man. It feels good to get a paycheck. He's like, yeah, it's not your money. And I said, Oliver, I don't know if I can afford to make these amends. You know what he said to me? You can't afford not to. Dude, I am grateful for good sponsorship like that because I just kept taking actions that didn't make sense to me. And I kept just doing what he told me to do, and my life took flight. So I'm at Home Depot. I'm sitting in the bathroom taking my break, and out of nowhere, my phone rings. And it's Kevin. After 8 years of radio silence, you can't tell me that's not God. I said, Kev, I have a list of people that I need to talk to, and you're one of them. It's really big of you to call me. Would you be willing to sit down with me? And he said, yes. So I went to him, and I made the amends, man. And asked him what I could do to make it right. And he said, Tim, I'm having some trouble at work. Would you be willing to come back and work for me? And that's great, man. That is a huge God moment. I was able to show up and be the employee that I could not have been and literally have some longevity of having some substance as an employee. But it just gave me the opportunity to make more money, to make more financial amends, and to stay in the middle of this deal and keep moving my feet. But I went over after that Christmas with my niece, and they had had two little girls in that eight-year absence that I wasn't in their lives. And his daughter sat on my lap at Christmas, and it was the same damn thing, man. The same thing happened. She bought one of those Resurgence Polaroid cameras. She sat in my lap. She snapped a picture. Day after Christmas, Kevin walks into her room, and on her corkboard in her room, she had that Polaroid hung up. He snapped a picture, and he said, Tim, it's good to have you back, man. I'm Uncle Tim to those girls, thanks to you guys. What a gift, man. What a beautiful gift to be given just by doing some shit that don't make sense to me, that I don't want to do, and that I don't think is going to work for me. I get all these beautiful blessings in my life. One last nine-step deal, and I want to talk about 10, 11, and then a little bit of 12 in my life. So another guy I'd torn through his life. I mean, financially, lived with him, lied to him, got over on him. Any way that you can do a friend wrong, I did this guy wrong. So I set up the amends with him, and it's financial in nature, and I bring the money, and then I lay out all the other ways that I cause damage, and then I ask him what I can do to make it right, and he says, you know, Tim, to be honest with you, I just want to get back to what we love doing. And before I was totally off the rails, his parents had a cabin in Vermont, and we went snowboarding every year before I could keep a snowboard out of the pawn shop. He said, I want to get back to what we love doing. I want to take a trip every year. And thanks to you guys, I was just talking with him yesterday. This is now 8 years in the making. We've been to Bozeman, Montana. We've been to Salt Lake City, Utah. We've been to Colorado. I fly in from Philly. He flies in from Seattle. We meet, and I'm telling you guys, when I get off that gondola and I am 12,000 feet up in the air, I am so close to my God. I am next to a relationship that's been repaired through the 12 steps. And when I strap that snowboard in and I'm going down that hill, I think I'm ever closer to God when that's happening. And you guys gave me that gift. What a beautiful gift that is, too. He calls me with issues in his life. I'm like, dude, don't you remember who I was? He's like, I remember exactly who you were. That's why I'm calling you. Because I know something different has happened in your life from what you've been doing. What a gift, man. So, dude, if you're hesitant, if you have some amends that are looming, you're skeptical, I'm telling you, man, do not listen to your brain. Listen to a sponsor and just keep taking the actions, because that's where it happened for me. Because I look at it this way. I had been sitting in darkness my whole life, like it's sitting in a dark cave. And that third step was like striking flint. So if you're in a dark cave and you strike flint, it's going to light up for a second, but you can't really see because it's still really dark. But after striking that flint, steps 4 and 5, that flint turned that spark into a flame. And then in steps 8 and 9, that flame turned into a fire. And that's why I want to talk about steps 10, 11, and 12. Because as with any good fire, if you don't throw logs on that fire, steps 10, 11, and 12, that fire is going to dwindle. Now, there'll always be embers there because the light of God is in here. but I got to throw logs on to keep the fire burning. So I look at that 10th step as a way to keep myself in check, keep me accountable to a sponsor. I send him nighttime inventory, not every night, but the majority of the time. And I have a phone call slotted with him once a week so that we can discuss my alcoholism. Because I still lack perspective. I still think I'm right. All the time. So I'm able to discuss these things with him by literally looking at that 10th step and looking at that 9-9 inventory. And I'm telling you guys that prayer and meditation is a huge part of my life. Huge part of my life. I look at it this way. Okay? I need help. I know I need help. That prayer is like dialing 911. I'm calling for help. And if I'm taking time to pray and I don't take time to meditate to listen for the answer, that's like God picking up the call on that 911 call and then I'm just hanging the phone up. Like, I need help. Don't want to know how, but I'm done. So it's really important for me to couple those things together because I'm not a big 12 and 12 guy. But the 12 and 12 says prayer, meditation, and inventory are effective when taken separately, but when interwoven, create an unshakable foundation. And that just holds true in my life today because alcoholism always presents itself in my thinking. Dude, this had nothing to do with drinking and drugging. I thought it did. It has everything to do with how I'm operating and walking on the earth without a God and spiritual principles in my life. So the other way that I look at prayer and meditation is this. If I'm sitting by on the road and I have a dead battery, I'm sitting there, no power. Somebody pulls up with power. And if I want to get on the road and get going again, there are two terminals on that battery. So if they take the red and connect positive to positive, which is a prayer, pretty good, no power. Connect both terminals. Now, prayer and meditation, there's power flowing. And I'm operating from a different power source and I'm able to get on the road again. What a gift all of that is. Step 12 has saved my ass more than I care to admit. 5 years sober. Dude, what is it about that 5-year mark, man? There's always trouble in the 5-year mark. 5-year mark. There she is. In AA, founder. Walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, beyond my wildest dreams, there she is. Get into a relationship. I'm telling you guys, I had no idea. No idea that I didn't invite God into that area of my life. I just thought that God gave me a gift. I'm 5 years sober. I'll be able to navigate this part of my life. When the big book talks about being crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is either everything or he's nothing. He either is or he isn't. And what was our choice to be? In sobriety, I hit another spiritual death, got crushed, but then got right in the middle of this thing. And before you know it, I'm at a low point. I'm wondering why I'm feeling the way that I'm feeling. I'm in my home group and the guy walks up to me and he's kicking, doing the, that thing. Looking at the ground, acting like kicking stones. I'm like, I know exactly what that is. They asked me to sponsor him. We get right in the book, man, and I get free of all this trauma. And in sobriety, my life takes flight all over again from that 12th step. That's why it says that practical experience will show that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other activities fail. So anytime I'm in a rough spot, that 12 step is saving my ass because you got to remember what Abby said to Bill, and it doesn't hold any more true in my life than it did from when he said it to what it is now. And Abby said to Bill that faith without works is dead. How appallingly true for the alcoholic. If an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he's unable to survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Just because you get sober, man, don't mean you're not going to hit trials and low spots. But if I'm in the middle of work and self-sacrifice, it may not look like what I think it's supposed to look like, but I get pulled out of a hole every time. What a gift that is, man. To hear another man's footstep, to watch him drop the weight that he's been carrying, to watch him make amends and watch convicted felons become productive members of society. I had a guy call me on Thanksgiving that I was living with. People are like, you can't have a guy sponsor that you sponsor living with you. I'm like, why not? He has a spiritual life. He has these principles. He's in the middle of this. There's nobody I'd rather have. But he called me on Thanksgiving and said, dude, I know that this is a holiday, but I'm getting ready to get in a book with this new guy, and this is the only pocket of time, so I'm going to come over. Do you mind just making yourself scarce? And I hung that phone up. I had tears coming out of my eyes. I'm like, dude, here's a convicted felon that was consumed with himself, who's taken this program of action, got free, and is now literally sacrificing on a holiday to give of himself to somebody else. What a gift that is, man. What a gift. So you guys have given me purpose. That 12-step has created so much purpose in my life that I don't know what to do with it sometimes. It's unbelievable what God puts in my path. Dave, I'm going to put you out there a little bit. Dave was in a box truck, excuse my language, shitting in a McDonald's bag. Came to Wilmington, Delaware, was ready, willing, able. We sat down, took him through the program of action. We were just talking about how strange it is for him to be domesticated these days. Like, he's like, dude, I'm overwhelmed with gratitude washing dishes because I have dishes to wash. He's in a healthy relationship from what I understand. To watch this stuff happen, to watch God enter other people's hearts. You can't script it any better. So when you're in the middle of this doing it, it produces fruit beyond. So I'm going to tell you very briefly in 2 minutes what my life looked like today, small reading, and then I'm done because I've talked enough. But if there's anybody in this room that wants to discuss anything, wants my phone number, if there's any way that I can be useful to anybody in the room, please do not hesitate and come up and talk to me about this deal because, man, I have such passion for this program and I know what it can do if somebody just gets a little glimpse of light and is willing to walk towards that light. So what does my life look like today? At the very end for me, I walked into Lyman House with holes in everything that I owned and a trash bag over my shoulder and the heel flapping off the back of my shoe. Lowest point of my entire life. As God would see fit, I'm a counselor at the men's Lyman House today. I get to see guys walk in just as lost and broken and hopeless as I was. I get to see them go to 2 meetings a day. I get to see them get sponsors. I get to see them write 4 steps, do 5th steps, make their amends. I get to see them go out in the world, but more importantly, I get to see them come back to that house and offer hope to other residents in that house. What a beautiful gift. What a beautiful gift that is. I know it's cliche, like, what does everybody want to be when they're in rehab? Like, I'm going to be a drug and alcohol counselor. That's what everybody says. Well, as God see fit, I'm a counselor at the Men's Lyman House because I think that's where he wants me because those 3rd step promises are true. If I stay close to him and perform his work well, he's going to provide what I need. Not what I want, what I need. And what I need is a bunch of sick guys that really need help. And I need them just as much as they need me. So when I'm in the middle of that deal and it's happening, it produces fruit beyond. So I'm not a homeowner, but my home is my sanctuary. It's a place where I do bring guys in there and we go through that big book. And I've had huge God moments in that small sanctuary that I have. And it's a place that I call home and it's mine, you know. I have a vehicle. I have the title to it. Ready? Trifecta. It's registered, on its way to being registered. Because I just bought a new car. That's another gift. Through my mom, no less. And it's insured, all at the same time. That's crazy, man. So, what a beautiful gift you guys have given me. So I'm going to read something small because to me this is the essence of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I'm going to shut up. So last 2 paragraphs on the 164 pages of action, and this is, to me, what Alcoholics Anonymous is in a nutshell. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Guys, thank you for my life, and thanks for having me.